Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today, produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It's tempting to say that nothing matters in the markets except the close, where the major indices meet the bell every day. But if you do that on days like today, you miss the interesting parts, like what's happening with all the money that's not buying stocks. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Elance, where businesses can connect with programmers, designers, marketers, and other independent professionals to get jobs done. You can build a team online at elance.com. And by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, www.batteninstitute.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Good to have you here on this Tuesday, everybody. It is the 25th of May. And if ever there was a day not to peek at the Dow Industrials at the opening bell, why, this was it. Wall Street followed the global lead this morning. Traders opened the day down 3% across the board and spent the next 7.5 hours trying to get back to even. They did get there, or close enough. But in the past couple of weeks, the three major indices have lost 10% or more than 1,000 points on the Dow Industrials. That is a lot of money not in stocks. Chris Lowe is the chief economist at FTN Financial. Chris, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to be here.
Where is all that money that's going out of stocks going? It's got to be going someplace.
You know, it is. And one of the few places we're seeing money flowing in is bank accounts.
So people are taking their money out of stocks and sticking it in a bank account that gets, I don't know, like 1% or 2% interest?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we talked to quite a few community bankers here. Their number one problem is that they're trying to find places to invest that money safely. And because of that, many of them aren't paying any interest at all.
Key word there being safely. One of the big safe havens is U.S. Treasury bonds and bills. That's been getting all kinds of big inflows, yes?
Yeah, no, that's right. And what happens is the more money that comes in, it bids up the price, which means the yield goes down. A month ago, a 10-year Treasury note paid 4%. Now it's paying just a little bit more than 3%. So the return has gone way down because of the investor interest.
Play that out for me then, Chris. What does that falling rate on, say, the 10-year mean in a broader context?
Well, hopefully it eventually will mean lower borrowing rates for U.S. businesses and even mortgages. It's not happening yet, but at some point, hopefully the higher yields are going to lure people out and it will lower borrowing costs. It's interesting that we had a global crisis, financial crisis in 1998. What ended up happening was because of that drop in yields and borrowing costs, our economy actually accelerated to about 4.5%, and we had a really strong, good year economically.
Other than regular people taking their money out, though, Chris, a lot of this motion in the markets is being driven by big institutional traders, right?
Absolutely it is, and that's one of the reasons we're seeing this volatility, that the hedge funds and a new type of trader called the high-frequency trader, these are people who claim they never hold a stock for more than about 12 seconds, taking advantage of the bid offer and volatility in the markets and so on. It does lend an air of chaos, especially on big days in the market.
Let me change gears on you here for a second and ask about commodities. Oil prices have been falling with the threat of some kind of economic slowdown, but other commodities are up. I mean, metals and those kinds of things?
Well, metals especially, and gold is making a push today. We're awfully close to 1,200 an ounce again, and so the alternative, if you can't be in stocks and you can't be in bonds because it's not safe, is to go into gold.
Characterize this whole thing for me. Is it what we're seeing in the markets, that is? Is it a regular ebb and flow of things, or is there something more significant?
No, it's clearly something more significant. And Bill Dudley, who's the president of the New York Fed, talked about this in a speech recently where he said, we've just come out of a period that economists call the Great Moderation, where regulators behaved in predictable ways and policymakers behaved in predictable ways, and we thought we knew how markets worked. All those regular predictable behaviors are gone, and because of that, he said, we're probably going to enter into a period of years with higher volatility. And I think that makes a great deal of sense. This kind of volatility is probably here to stay for a while.
Chris Lowe, Chief Economist at FTN Financial. Chris, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Kai. I hope that helps and it doesn't just confuse people even more.
I think we're getting there. Thanks a bunch.
Okay.
Traders were a bit confused today. A lousy start worked its way back to an almost break-even day. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. When you think about healthcare, small mom-and-pop shops probably don't come immediately to mind. It's more like giant insurers and huge hospitals that you think of. There is a slice of that market, though, where small is still significant. Home healthcare and hospice services. But a billion-dollar deal that was announced today could change that, as Gregory Warner reports from the Marketplace Health Desk in Philadelphia.
The deal between Gentiva Health Services and Odyssey Healthcare creates the largest home health and hospice provider in the nation. Karen Culp is president of Home Care Associates in Philadelphia. She says combining services makes sense. When people move from home care to hospice care, they're at the end of their lives.
You really want to have consistent care. You don't want to have to then be faced with having to go to another agency or another caregiver.
Culp is a small player in a business of small players. But other big home care agencies like Gentiva are said to be shopping around for mergers of their own. Sean Bloom is CEO of the National PACE Association. He says healthcare reform encourages consolidation by increasing bundled payments.
When you bundle payment, you're effectively forcing the hospital to work with the doctor, to work with the home care company, to work with the hospice. In essence, they are sharing in that pool of money.
Changes in Medicare reimbursement rules have driven a series of booms and busts in the home care industry. In the year 2000, a change in Medicare rules set off an explosion. The industry doubled in size to $17 billion. There are some 500 new healthcare agencies registered every year, mostly clustered in Texas, California, and Florida, which have the loosest regulations. Changes to Medicare payments this year could put thousands of those mom-and-pops out of business, just as the industry as a whole is set to grow.
There's going to be a lot of baby boomers out there. They're going to be needing help.
Mark Bayada runs Bayada Nurses, which provides home care in some 18 states. He says more older people are living alone, and technology allows more people to get care at home.
The revolution is moving care from the hospital to the home, and generally people that are home like it.
With profit margins higher than most healthcare industries, home care businesses like it too. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
So did you know that this is National Small Business Week? Yeah, I didn't know it either. But to mark the occasion, one very big business took center stage today. At an event on Capitol Hill, Google released a report that says its advertising helped generate $54 billion in economic activity last year, a tidy sum. And as Brett Neely reports, there is more to it than meets the eye.
Google says that $54 billion is essentially the profit its customers made as a result of using its advertising tools. The report breaks that number down, state by state, highlighting successful small businesses that use Google Ads. In Blacksburg, Virginia, Jim Barney says his company, ClickandPledge.com, wouldn't exist without Google.
It is our number one driver of leads and sales in this company, without question.
Small business owner Tom Patak runs an office supply business in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. He says maintaining his ads with Google was too time-consuming.
I would have been happy to pay them a lot more if I was getting the clicks, but I wasn't getting the clicks to my site.
Char Van Boskirk is an analyst at Forrester Research. She wonders whether Google's ads are really generating more business.
Or is this just business that was going on anyway that Google happened to get in and take a share of? And they don't talk about that.
The report comes out as competitors and privacy advocates fear the company has become too powerful. The feds almost blocked Google's purchase of a mobile advertising company. Van Boskirk says the company's trying to polish its image fast.
It's not enough for them to just sort of sit and acknowledge that they've changed the way the advertising world works. They want to assign a number to it so that everyone will say, oh, you know, this has been a value of X.
She says the report is a way for Google to prove its value, especially as lawmakers consider bills that would affect the company. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
President Obama will be in San Francisco tonight. He's headlining a campaign fundraiser for Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer there. One reason that Boxer needs the money, one of her possible opponents this fall, is former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina. After piling up personal fortunes in the private sector, it's not uncommon for corporate bigwigs to give politics a go. Here in California this year, besides Fiorina, former executives from eBay and Facebook are running. But a business world resume can sometimes backfire, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Once upon a time, Meg Whitman ran eBay and sat on the board of Goldman Sachs. Now, in the race to become California's governor, Republican opponents are using Whitman's business connections against her.
Whitman's entire fortune is intertwined with Goldman Sachs. She helped manage Goldman and received sweetheart stock deals so unethical they were outlawed.
How much do voters care about skeletons in the corporate closet?
They don't really take unless the public is already listening to the arguments about the issue.
That's Barbara O'Connor, director of the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media. She says Whitman's ties to Goldman Sachs resonate because voters are already upset with Wall Street. O'Connor says another candidate on the wrong side of public discourse is Chris Kelly. Kelly's a candidate for attorney general, but he used to be the head of privacy for Facebook.
In the last couple of weeks, we've had Privacy Day and various other issues. So Chris Kelly's claims that he's a privacy maven coming out of Facebook are really ones that people may dispute.
Political adversaries aren't the only ones digging for dirt. Dan Gaynor with the Conservative Media Research Center says the press is inconsistent when evaluating ties between businesses and politicians.
They assume businesses, particularly financial businesses, support Republicans. But in fact, what we found is that they support Democrats, and Wall Street in particular.
Wall Street wheeler dealers make good villains, but there's still one group that has a worse reputation. You guessed it, incumbents. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Here's a meeting I'll guess most of you won't be at. The American Society for Artificial Internal Organs gets together later this week in Baltimore. Artificial, not meaning mechanical here. They're going to be talking about the latest technologies in growing new organs, from scratch, bladders and kidneys and the like. And we're going to need them. Life expectancy in this country is pushing 80 years old. A lot of people are already outliving their organs at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars in health care every year. And that is where artificial organs come in. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY, Carrie Grenz reports.
I'm standing on a graded metal walkway, suspended among a buzzing labyrinth of giant silver air ducts and piping. This $18 million ventilation system hangs above the future manufacturing facility for Tengian, a biotechnology company in suburban Philadelphia.
To me, it looks a little bit like one of those futuristic space stations where you've created everything to sustain life on another planet, but it's really just to sustain the facility downstairs.
Mark Staybach is a Tengian vice president. Downstairs is where Tengian will be creating human tissue to replace the bladder. The maze of ventilation is there to create a perfectly antiseptic environment. No outside artificial air allowed, let alone dirty shoes or street clothes. We gown up in white jumpsuits, booties, and bonnets to take a tour of the labs.
You know, just a couple of years ago, it was a furniture warehouse, so it was just empty space.
It's still pretty empty. Just a few refrigerator-sized incubators stacked in the middle of the room. Tengian's product is still being tested in humans. It's also very elementary at this point, doing only part of the work of the bladder. Ultimately, though, the company aims to produce a fully functional organ. But why build the factory before the product is even approved? Staybach says Tengian needed to convince investors that constructing artificial organs is possible.
The whole field has a tremendous potential. In fact, it has a potential to completely revolutionize medicine.
Dwayne Nash is a vice president for equity research at Wedbush Securities. He points out that thousands of people die each year waiting for heart or kidney transplants. 6% of Medicare's budget is spent on kidney failure alone. The need for new organs is in the hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions, but no one's produced one yet.
for better or for worse, our imagination has exceeded our technical abilities for the past decade or so.
Nash says Tianjian's bladder tissue shows that the technology is catching up. The bigger obstacle is money.
At the moment, with the market kind of jumping up and down, investors overall are fairly cautious, and there is not tremendous appetite right now to jump into a very risky field.
Risky because the technology could fail, but also because health insurance companies may not cover these new treatments, especially ones that could be very expensive. Gary Kurtzman is a life sciences investor with Safeguard Scientifics, and he helped fund Tianjian. He says it's much harder now to get new therapies approved by regulators and insurers, and healthcare reform aimed at controlling costs only makes it harder. Kurtzman says companies need big results.
It's much easier to conceive of making a case to an insurance company or to Medicare for something that really is fundamentally better and fundamentally different, not just prolonging life or incrementally changing the patient's condition, but actually restoring essentially the patient back to as good as new.
And that's precisely what replacement organs would do. But analyst Dwayne Nash is doubtful the field will actually reach full-functioning replacement organs in the first generation of products. Tianjian is among the most advanced companies in growing internal organs, but even their artificial bladder isn't close yet to mimicking the original. Nash says investors and insurers will have to be happy enough with incremental in the meantime. In Philadelphia, I'm Carrie Grenz for Marketplace.
Coming up, for recent graduates, the siren call of Wall Street.
It's something that can be very difficult to resist once you're there. But I think the fact that it pays well keeps a lot of very smart people in an industry that challenges them.
But first, let's do the numbers. Yes, it is the mixed markets music, but barely. Stocks fell sharply this morning, spent the day clawing their way back. The Dow Industrials ended down just 22 points, 0.2%, closed at 10,043. The NASDAQ off 2 points, just over a 0.1%, finished at 2,210. The S&P 500 edged up less than a point, a fraction of 1%, closed at 1,074. Housing stocks lost a little ground after reports that home prices could fall even further. KB Homes trimmed just over a 0.1%. Lennar lost 0.8%. Toll Brothers stepped back just under a 0.5%. Some drug companies fared better. Neurocrine Bioscience shot up 24.5% today after reporting positive results on an experimental drug. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Let us give you the business 24 hours a day. Just tap marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest financial news and reports from around the globe on how the economy is affecting our lives.
Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. The Commerce Department reports on sales of new homes for the month of April. On Capitol Hill, the Joint Economic Committee holds a hearing titled Avoiding a Lost Generation, How to Minimize the Impact of the Great Recession on Young Workers. And it's time to buckle down and study. 10 super smart students compete in the final round of the National Geographic Bee. The winner gets $25,000 for college so they can study some more. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
And write letters you did, emails, actually, but you get my point. My interview with Boston sociologist Juliet Shore struck a nerve. Shore's new book, Plenitude, is all about how we ought to spend less time worrying about work and money and more time taking time for relationships and the environment. Lee Borden from Tallahassee, Alabama, loves that.
Go, Juliet. My kids are tired of hearing me say this, so I'll say it here. When I was growing up, we defined success as a function of how much money you made. in the next two or three decades, we will define success as a function of the extent to which you can be happy while making little or no money.
Which would be great, but Maria Rosales from Greensboro, North Carolina, takes issue with something Shore said, that the benefits of large-scale production, companies like Walmart, are just going to go away.
I'm not yet convinced that this is true at all when it comes to something like the billions of people in the world who live on less than they need to sustain themselves. Local agriculture isn't enough. Many people live where there is no arable land, where there are droughts and floods, etc.
From floods, we're going to turn to financial reform. In a commentary yesterday, former Bush administration economist Glenn Hubbard criticized the overhaul bill that Congress is working on. He said it doesn't do enough to stop too big to fail, that it just encourages government bailouts. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia and a member of the banking committee that wrote that bill, heard that and got in touch. He sent us a statement that said, in part, Mr. Hubbard ignores the fact that the Senate's bill limits leverage, it imposes increasingly strict capital requirements, and requires regulators to either sign off on a funeral plan or break up the company. And Hubbard's claim that the bill establishes a permanent bailout authority, Senator Warner says, is simply wrong. On our weekly wrap this past Friday, one of our contributors noted that economic crises and bubbles happen because investors underestimate risk and overvalue assets, but that kind of human behavior is just hard to regulate. Adam Fierst of Denver, Colorado, says you can indeed reform bad investment behavior.
There is a misalignment between the risks and rewards. The people making the bets, stock and bond traders, fund managers, etc., don't have any skin in the game, at least not nearly enough. Would they have made the same investment decisions if they were playing with their own money?
Finally, we aired a story last week about a new social media site for kids, 6 to 10-year-olds, called Togetherville. It's ad-free and all that, but still not enough for Gene Miller of Minneapolis.
I'm not opposed to Togetherville, but I don't think it should be linked to Facebook. The most valuable thing to learn from sites like Facebook is that there is a lot of information you never wanted to know about anyone else. I got onto Facebook to keep up with relatives, and now I want to unfriend them all.
Oh, don't we all, Gene? If you want to be our friend, we're on Facebook and Twitter, too. Or even if you don't, you can drop us a note at our website. It's marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. While Wall Street awaits its regulatory fate at the hands of Congress and the president, there are thousands of brand new college students out there, brand new graduates, with a stake in the street's future. The big money that can be had in finance attracts some of the brightest minds. And when financial services were helping to drive the economy, sending the cream of the academic crop to Wall Street seemed to make some sense. After the last few years of financial crisis, though, some people are asking whether it's worth it for the graduates and for the country. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson took a trip up the Charles River in Cambridge, Massachusetts, looking for some answers.
It's a crisp spring evening on Harvard's campus. Students are filing into those infamous brick buildings for final exams and study sessions. Many seniors will soon be exchanging the ivory tower for a glass one, and it's likely to overlook the Hudson River rather than the Charles.
When you came in here as a freshman, what was your ideal career down the road?
I think like a lot of kids at Harvard, embarrassingly, my goal is to be president someday.
Instead, Colin Motley will be heading to a well-known private equity firm.
I like to believe that money didn't have a lot to do with it, but the paycheck you can't get away from. You need to eat, you need to live somewhere, and a lot of times being in an exciting place like Boston or New York is expensive, so it is important to be able to afford somewhere to live.
Tejas Sathian was enchanted with a career on the street after an internship at an investment bank. He'll be heading back to the same bank shortly after graduation.
It's something that can be very difficult to resist once you're there. But I think the fact that it pays well keeps a lot of very smart people in an industry that challenges them. And I think, as we've seen from this crisis, that finance has an important role in the economy. And I think it's important that smart people get there with the right perspectives to make sure that they're doing well for the American economy rather than just seeking profits.
But if they're doing more than just seeking profits, where are the results? What's the country getting out of all these high-paid, well-dressed bankers and traders? Maybe not as much as we could be, according to Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff.
For the past many years,
a disproportionate share of students have been taking jobs on Wall Street, far, far more than was, say, the case 15 years ago, even 10 years ago.
And are these students who you could imagine taking a totally different career path and using their skills in a completely different way?
Well, absolutely. I think that's a concern that people across the spectrum of education have.
But many of the students I talk to say Wall Street is just the beginning for them. It'll be a learning opportunity, and it'll make grad school affordable. Then they can take their new skills crafting derivatives and brokering deals elsewhere. Vikas Lonakati will start a job at a major investment bank this fall.
You know, on Wall Street, there's a significant number of people who go from Wall Street or from the business world off to nonprofit organizations or in government or other institutions like that. So I definitely see myself as being one of those people in the long term.
Lonakati makes no apologies for his chosen starting point. He sees Wall Street as a job creator and says there's no greater contribution a person can make to society than to help create jobs.
I think it's unarguable that there needs to be a change in the way people on Wall Street get paid. But the function that Wall Street provides is enormously important to society. I think that's just demonstrated by the fact that when Wall Street stopped working, the economy stopped working.
Professor Rogoff buys that to a point. The economist in him wants to believe that all those Harvard students are heading to the street because the free market is offering the best rewards for the most important jobs.
You know, I think we can point at some real examples where the U.S. has a great financing system for venture capital. We're willing to take a flyer on people in ways that countries with less sophisticated financial systems don't. But there's an aspect to what happens on Wall Street that seems to have nothing to do with that, where they're just trading exchange rates and interest rates with each other, really making money off their clients.
And all the while denying us a potential mathematician or physicist, maybe even a president. Then again, presidents only make 400 grand a year. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, the lighter side of the Gulf oil spill. If you happen to be on Twitter, go check out at BP Global PR. It is not, needless to say, the official BP public relations account. Not with tweets like this, it's not. Quote, please do not take any of the oil you find on the beach. It is the property of British Petroleum, and we will sue. At BP Global PR, check it out. It's pretty funny. Anyway, we got to go. That's Marketplace from American Public Media this Tuesday afternoon. Today, the Dow down 22 points, 0.2%. The Nasdaq skimmed off just about 2 points, a little more than 0.1%. The S&P 500 rather bumped up less than 0.4%. Thanks to Jennifer Collins and Ethan Lindsay on our morning report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. Coming up next time, Wall Street has its own issues with financial reform, but your local bank is questionable too.
If we get too much regulation, what we're going to find is that community banks are not going to be able to put those resources that they need towards economic development.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.